Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Lauren and Isabella met dancing in high school in Sydney, Australia. In this episode, both generously share their experiences as pre-professional dancers. Today, Lauren dances recreationally and is exploring a new and different career pathway. Isabella has completed a Bachelor of Arts in Arts Management and Dance Performance and a Master of Creative Industries. Before we begin, I'd like to let you know that we discuss some difficult topics in this episode, and it might be best to listen with a parent. I've also included some resources in the show notes, just in case you need them. Remember, go get them, but don't get them all at once. So welcome, Lauren and Isabella, to the Prepoint Pod. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So we're talking today about decision-making through pre-professional pathways and how those journeys can kind of differ for dancers and the sorts of things that might influence those decisions. Because I think once you have point shoes, it's then what do I do with them? That's kind of the place that we're moving to with this podcast. And you're both dancers who have danced, I guess, through high school quite seriously, and now you have very, I guess, different but similar pathways that you're following, and we're just going to talk a little bit about your experiences as student dancers and moving into the careers that you're moving into now and some of the pathways that, you know, that ballet training can lead to. So I'll start with Lauren first. Can you explain your ballet pathway?
Okay, so I first started dance when I was roughly 3 years old at just a local dance school. I went there partially because my sister loved dance and she went there and I did everything my big sister did, so I followed her. I stayed there up until I finished primary school, and then at that stage it was time to progress into a larger dance school, partially because my local dance school shut down. So, and I still wanted to continue dance, and so did my sister. When deciding a dance school, because there was all a few different schools around in Sydney, and we chose a school mainly for convenience, because my sister and I both went to an academic high school. In year seven, I know some dancers go full time at such an early age. Although I still wanted to maintain my academics, partially because I know that academics are so important. My sister and I went to a high school in Strathfield, and so we went to McDonald College Performing Arts School. I stayed there after hours until year nine, and year nine was also kind of a crucial, pivotal moment for many dancers, where I know a lot of them either go full-time, although the compromise was with my parents is that I could go to a performing arts school. And so I transitioned to going to McDonald College Performing Arts School, and I went there for my academics, and I also did my performing arts there, which was classical ballet during the day as well as after hours. It was a fantastic school. I learned so much. It was great. And then in year 11, so I stayed there for about 2 years. It's also around the time where a pivotal moment in a dancer's life is when they either go overseas or they do more pre-professional training. And so that was the time I did my audition videos at the end of year 10. I sent them off to a whole heap of schools. I was very fortunate, though, that the English National Ballet School, they came to Macdonald College's summer school, and I did the in-person audition, and I was very fortunate to receive a full scholarship to English National Ballet School in London. So I left to go there in the middle of year 11. I stopped doing all my academics because I thought, who needs them? Who needs academics? I'm going to be a ballet dancer. And in saying that, over at the English National Ballet School, you do get a diploma. So I thought that would count for something here in Australia, although it's a bit hard to get a ballet diploma from Trinity College London to count for academic points at a university here in Sydney, at least I found anyway. After in London, I ended up moving schools again to Amsterdam, and that was just during my third year. And I moved with a few other students in my dance school, and we moved partially due to not the best management in directors. Unfortunately, whilst I was at the school, there was a huge shift in teachers, big changes after the first year and again after the second year. And then after I left, there was another big change. And that inconsistency in teaching kind of did not lead the best progression in my ballet career. And so I made the decision to move to Amsterdam and stay there for about a year and a bit. But then unfortunately, I had some health issues and had to come home. And that's kind of that.
It's an interesting point that you make about changing teaching staff. Obviously, that's something that, you know, there's actually often very little control over that situation when you're a student. How does that then affect you as a student, or how did you feel that it affected you? Like, was it confusing in your training? Or, I mean, having a variety of different teachers is sometimes a really good thing, or having like guest teachers coming in and lots of different perspectives. But like, at what point does it become really challenging?
So it came challenging to the point, well, that each teacher had their own style, and there's nothing wrong with that, and in fact it's great, a slightly different style. Although, for example, on the Saturdays we used to have an open kind of style class with very different teachers, like from the different year groups. Also, they had different ways of saying different things slightly, because there was Cuban style, there was one teacher from Russia, teacher from America, teacher from France, and each country has a very different unique style. So that was interesting. Also, there wasn't the best management in saying that. There were other things too.
Yeah, so yeah, that's true. I guess, how old were you when you were changing teachers like that, so changing the different styles?
So when I first went over there in, I was first year, I was very Russian-based style, so Vagadova style. And then in second year, we had a bit of a change. It was a Cuban style, more Cuban style. And third year was English, very English-based. But then I left, so.
So how old were you at sort of from first and second year?
So when I went into first year, I had just turned 17, so
yeah, okay,
my 17th birthday is fine, I guess. And I definitely learned a lot from learning the different styles of ballet, because they're each so different and you work so differently.
So which is your favorite?
Which one did you prefer?
Yeah,
I definitely have to say I had an amazing teacher in second year, and I really like the Cuban style. But I think it's not particularly the Cuban style. I think it was her particular style of teaching. The way she taught dance made me change my ballet technique forever. Mm-hmm. She was very specific about the anatomy, the placement of the bones. And mm-hmm. I know, speaking for myself, and I think on behalf of the class, that we can say that we changed our ballet technique, the way we worked, how our muscles developed. I learned mm-hmm. a lot about how different placement of the bones impact how your muscles development. And because ballet is so much about aesthetics, that is a very crucial element. And I think growing mm-hmm. up, dancers have all these things about, you know, you can't have too big thighs or too big calf, because it's very mm-hmm. much aesthetic thing. And so I learned that if you put your bones in anatomically the right placement, then you would develop the lines that are aesthetically ideal for ballet. So mm-hmm. it made ballet make sense. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. And so Isabella, what's your ballet pathway?
Very similar to Lauren. I was the little sibling, so I like to follow everything that my older brother did, basically all the sport that he did. And then when I was about 7, I said, Jackson, I'm doing ballet now. I assume you don't want to follow me. So I did it by myself. I started at a local dance school. I think I was in year 7 as well when I finally changed. Yes. I grew up in Southwest Sydney. So I went to Westfield Sports High School. They had a fabulous dance program, which I did enjoy being there. And then in year 7, when I started high school, I changed from the local dance studio to MacArthur Ballet and Dance Studio, which was a very big step for me because it was a very ballet specialist school, which is what I wanted, and I hated change even in year 7, so it was very scary but very good. So I think how long was I there for? Year 7, 8, 9, for 3 years. So I did up to advanced foundation in my RAD exams, and I think it was about year 9 when a lot of the girls at my studio started going full time. And that was when I had countless nights with mum and dad saying, "Oh, that sounds interesting. Would I be able to do that?" And same here, my parents are both high school English teachers. So they said, "No way. Oh my goodness. What are you talking about? You're in a dance program at school. What more do you want?" You know? So I was still, when those girls were transitioning, I was still dancing with them after hours. So I did kind of find that difficult because I wanted to follow them, and I'd be like, "Oh, they're getting to do more ballet than me." But, you know, when I'm at school, in 2016, in year 11, I moved to McDonald College. That was a lot different as well, like moving to a much bigger school. And obviously the school had an actual academic school. I obviously met lots of beautiful ballerinas like Miss Lauren here. So I was very grateful. So I did my advance 1 and my advance 2 there at McDonald College. I was in the PS, the Premier State Ballet in year 11, but unfortunately I didn't do the actual performance because I was doing my HSC. So in terms of my ballet pathway, I did find that very difficult because I was always torn between doing school and ballet. So yes, I almost hated that in a way. Like I never felt like I had the best of both worlds, even though like a lot of people would look at me and say, "Oh, you do," you know? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think mm-hmm. when you're looking at the way that academics fits, like there are a lot of students that actually give ballet away when they start year 11 or 12, just because the academic load becomes so big. So I think it is always a challenge, I think, for those schools to make it work and to make it fit, I think, when they sort of have been running for so long, like they work out a way to kind of make it work. And it does mean probably giving you, you know, time to actually sit those really important exams at the end of year 12. And it just might be different, I think, you know, a European sort of system or an English system versus an Australian system. Yeah. Even, you know, talking to students that I work with in India, like their schooling system is completely different too. So different priorities and different things. Yeah, very cool.
Wow.
So similar pathways, but still quite different. So you both talk about your parents as being really strongly influencing your journey. Did you have any other sort of role models, like your teachers or peers or any other sort of experiences that made you sort of say, yes, I want to pursue this? Like, what was the turning point, for example, Isabella, that made you sort of say, yes, I want to go and audition for McDonald College? And I guess, Lauren, you talked a little bit about your the decision to change and move to Amsterdam. What was that sort of defining moment where you said, yep, that's it, I'm going to the UK? I know, like, for me, I had a moment where I was sitting, probably when I was in year seven, watching an Australian ballet production. It was the first main stage ballet production I ever saw, and it was Graham Murphy's Swan Lake. And I was sitting there in the audience thinking, yeah, I could probably give this a go. Little did I know that it was quite challenging to try. But I mean, everybody has a moment like that, probably, where the switch flips. So tell me, Isabella, tell me.
Yes. yes, I think when I decided to go to McDonald College, I thought, yes, I do want to make this move. But I also know I'm going to finish year 12. Like, I knew that. But I just thought, I know that it's out of the norm for ballet, but I'm going to finish year 12 and then I definitely want to do full time and see if I want to audition for places or, you know, if I just decide, no more dancing. So I did do that. And then after school, I did a few auditions for full time, one in Woolloomooloo and one in Wollongong. And I ended up going to Joanne Grace in Wollongong, which was amazing. It was very far because I was still living in Southwest Sydney at the time. But it was a fabulous experience. But definitely after the first term, I thought, oh, another turning point, definitely not for me. I felt like an old lady there I felt like I was trying to fit in to somewhere where I really didn't fit in a way. Like, I was 18 and I felt really old. So, yes, it was.
That is such an odd feeling.
Yes, a very, very odd feeling.
Yeah. There is sort of that push. We were speaking a little bit before we started recording this podcast. When you're so young, you're making these decisions to take ballet further. By the time you get to 18, you feel like you should have already made those choices. And I mean, it's technically possible to have a professional contract when you're 18.
Yeah.
It's just, I think, such a different pathway for everybody.
Yes.
So after one term, you stopped doing full time or?
So I just, I had already deferred my undergraduate at Macquarie Uni. So my Bachelor of Arts. Mm-hmm. So, I just literally in one day I undeferred it, and then about 3 days later I was at uni. I only missed 1 week, so I managed to catch up.
Yeah, the other thing I think that comes as quite a shock to dancers who have such a rigid schedule, training.
Yeah.
When you actually do transition into the academic world, there is so much more flexibility. And some people don't think that, but I think it takes coming from a less flexible schedule and then semester doesn't start till March. Oh, I can defer, and come back to it later. Or if I need special consideration, that's no problem. It's a very different environment.
Yes. And I think I always knew that I didn't have a thick enough skin as well for to continue pursuing ballet. But I think I needed to know that, like, I needed to try full time to really know, it's lovely, but I just enjoy dancing, it's not for me. So I think I would have regretted it if I didn't do full time or try.
I can see what you mean there, definitely. And even giving yourself permission to give it a go, I think is actually really powerful. Rather than being afraid of failing at it or afraid of it not working out. Well done.
Yes, thank you.
And so, Lauren.
My defining ballet moment. So when I performed in the Australian Ballet's Nutcracker, I believe I was roughly 10 years old in year four at primary school. That moment was the defining moment that made me go, I want to be a ballerina when I grow up. It was magical, it was transformative, it was a truly incredible experience. So after that point, in my mind, I thought I was going to do 2 years at an academic normal high school, 2 years at a full-time ballet school or potentially performing arts school. That was the, you know, the negotiation. And then after that, 2 years, 3 years pre-professional school, and then into a company, dancer, ballet dancer, anywhere in the world. I did not have a preference in location at that point. Although life doesn't always go to plan. So I did do my 2 years at an academic high school. I went to 2 years at a performing arts high school. It was a bit over 2 years because I left during year 11, not year 10. In my mind, I was leaving in year 10. So I left during year 11. I did do 3 years at a pre-professional school, but it wasn't all at one school. It was two and a bit in London and one in Amsterdam. And I did not go straight into a company. I ended up coming home because I was injured and sick. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think this is really valuable to have these pathways talked about, because I think probably when you are 10, 11, 12, you can see the pathway, like, or your teachers present a pathway, or you look at other, you know, other students that follow a particular pathway and you think, yeah, wow, that would be amazing for me. But, you know, it is really hard, and dancers are so often faced with challenges of injury and illness. And I think it's a really important, an important point of discussion, because these moments, I guess, can be either really defining in terms of finding your resilience, or they can be really defining in terms of finding another pathway.
Yeah.
And I guess sometimes, being a physio, I obviously meet lots of dancers who have injuries or are unwell. And I think sometimes the injury or the illness is often a catalyst rather than a cause. Mm. Sometimes it can be a cause. But I think adding, being overseas, like, adds this extra layer of complexity, you know, and that must be really difficult, being so young, coping away from your parents with injury and illness. Do you mind talking a little bit about that and what that experience was like?
Of course. So my first, so I got a few injuries, a few different bounds of sickness. My first injury was a labral tear to my right hip joint. So for those who don't know, it's a tear in your cartilage, and I was told it would either heal. Well, apparently they don't actually heal. You're a physiotherapist. They don't actually heal, and you either require surgery or physio or Pilates or something along those lines. When I was in London, I went to the physiotherapist at the school. My hip did not get better. I kept getting worse, actually. And so I ended up having to go home. I went to a doctor who told me they could book me in for surgery the next week. Although thankfully I sought out more opinions, and I found this marvelous physiotherapist here in Sydney, spine and pelvis, who fixed up my hip or something and gave me the most simple basic exercises. Very simple and basic, but it made me able to walk again. It helped me walk again without pain, which was, I found so absurd, because I was so used to limping. Because I was limping and compromising, I also developed injuries in my feet and my ankle and the other leg. So then I had to sort them out, but they kind of went away when I fixed up my hip. I believe I also got some stress reactions in my ankles and my feet during my time. They came and go a few times. I'm not entirely aware of how many, how often, but I do remember there were a few times. Illness wise, I got a stomach bug during my second year, which then led to constant acid reflux, which was every night not pleasant. It also led to weight fluctuation, which is not good in the ballet world because you're very much meant to stay the same weight, same aesthetic, and that did not happen. It also led me to having concentration difficulties, gut dysbiosis, brain fog, fatigue. I ended up then getting pneumonia, then I ended up getting an influenza, and then I came home, got better, ended up having more digestive issues, then I got some other illness, and then I developed chronic fatigue syndrome, and then I changed my diet. I had to change. I ended up coming home because the brain fog wasn't getting better, my fatigue wasn't getting better. At this stage, I had moved to Amsterdam already, thinking that if I changed my diet and stuff, because I was feeling better, that I'd be fine. But I think it was definitely, I did not realize how much the stress and the environment of the dance world was impacting my body subconsciously. And it has taken me a while to realize that. It did take my body a while to adjust back. So yeah, there were plenty. I had can keep going. I had chronically low white blood cells. I had never got a period yet, so I had chronic primary amenorrhea. I'm not sure what I'm saying.
Primary amenorrhea.
I had high cholesterol, which was quite abnormal because I didn't eat lots of saturated fats or anything, although now learning that can be linked to stress. What else? I had ridiculously high vitamin B12, which was also very abnormal. I had doctors thinking I had cancer, I had this, I had that, I had many blood tests, many unknown, but at the end of the day, I think it probably could all be brought to stress or something like that. So yeah,
I mean, firstly, well done for managing all of that by yourself overseas, and obviously you came home multiple times to have some help and some treatment. For how long did you actually stop dancing to get better during that time?
Do you mean with the transition? I stayed between the holiday schedule. So I, when their holidays were on, my holidays were on. So the big chunk of holidays was the middle of the year holidays, although I ended up having a bit longer because I ended up having to go to hospital. And then, so I did not stay in London after the hospital trip. I ended up going home because in London I was by myself.
I think too, that might have been a good time for you to receive some support. Did you still feel like you should have been dancing despite all of that? Did you keep trying to dance?
Of course I kept trying to dance.
Yeah.
Of course, you're stubborn. Yeah. You know, you're a dancer. You have this goal. You have this determination. You have this drive. You have this focus. It took my body to physically deteriorate to get to the point of, hang on a second, I think I cannot continue doing this goal or dream I had, which was very confronting. And it took me a while to come to terms with it, in the fact that this is my goal, but it's not quite working. My body is not quite coping here. So, yeah.
And so did you come to the decision yourself, or was it a decision that was sort of made in conjunction with your family and medical practitioners to actually stop? Or what made you say, I can't do this anymore? Do you remember?
There wasn't an actual decision, I can't do this anymore. It was like... So after I went home from London after the hospital, emergency hospital thing, my gosh, I ended up coming home, changing diet, went to see many doctors. I felt better. So I was like, okay, I can do this. I went back overseas to London. And then from there, the change of directors went to Amsterdam. And then I noticed my health started deteriorating again about another few months. A month or something into it, I knew something was off, and then it kept getting worse. And I'm like, oh gosh, this is actually, I need to get home, sort this out. I can't. That was when I was like, I can't keep dancing like this, because I'm not actually dancing. I'm just trying to move through the motions. I couldn't remember exercises. I couldn't do anything. when I came home, when I first came home after that, in my mind, it was always like, I'll get better. I go back to it. But after a while, time passed, and, you know, you're only young and you have to be young to go into, well, the idea is that you have to be young to go into professional dance, and time just passed and I did not touch my pointe shoes for a few months. I was very upset, and so it just kind of fell into the thing that I guess I'm not doing this anymore professionally. So yeah, now I've been home for almost 3 years and I'm not going back anytime soon. The more I'm home, the more I realize that I'm like, no, I'm not going back. There's no way. I'm done. So yeah.
Yeah. And so, Isabella, reflecting on your experiences, I suppose it wasn't necessarily health complications that, or like physical health complications that kind of, I suppose, made that decision for you to stop. But I guess, can you reflect mentally on what you were sort of thinking in your mind? So in that time you spent at the full-time school before you stopped, like, do you remember how you were feeling about dance at that time?
Yes, it was a big train wreck. Yes. I think pretty much from maybe from about year seven, I said in the back of my head, you know, I think I will still be able to pursue a ballet career in some way. But then when I got to full time, that really, I was like, no, it's, I'm glad that I finally chose to do this, because now I can finally see that, no, it's not for me. There were, the girls were absolutely lovely there, but, it really hit me how, mainly they all just talked about auditions and solos and prix de la scène, right, and all those, and they didn't really talk about anything else. And not that that was a bad thing, it was just like that was the world that they were in. And then I sat there, my 18-year-old self, and I said, no, I'm not in this world. And then the battle in my head started. I wish I was in that world, I wish I could do that, but yes, and I'm still working on it a bit today, but just being comfortable that I didn't have to try and audition and go somewhere, because I knew that I didn't like I knew I didn't want to go. And I remember one of my the other place that I auditioned for, not the one in Wollongong, they asked me if I was keen to go overseas, because I only had to train for 10 months and then I could be gone by September, I remember were their words. And I was like, oh my goodness, gone by September. And I remember saying to them, you know, I like to, you know, keep my options open. I just like to, you know, to dance for a year after high school full time would be lovely. And I remember one of them said to me, you have to love ballet that much that you want to go somewhere. You can't just stay here and love it. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what do you mean I can't just stay here and love it? Is that a crime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it really does depend on the school and the environment that you're in, I think.
Yeah.
It's a funny sort of world, because, yeah, there's not a lot of sort of scope, I think, for people who are at an age people would assume, you know, that you want to go. It is an assumption, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you make. Yeah. 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 Very powerful. Very powerful. I think
it was.
I think the whole, you know, identifying as a dancer, it's a really interesting thing, because I think for a long time when you stop doing what you're doing, you know, as intensely as that every day, all day, it becomes, you question whether you really are still a dancer. You say, I used to dance.
Yeah.
But you'll probably never really stop dancing. You know, and even if you do stop for a little while, it doesn't mean that you stop forever.
Yeah.
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 Like, you'll, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, in some way, shape or form. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I don't think you'll ever stop dancing, even whether it's around the house or anywhere.
Yeah.
Even now, when I'm just normal work and hospitality. I stand in positions with my feet turned out, yes. And people go to me, are you a dancer? You must be a ballet dancer. Or when I was carrying this tray stack once, I'm like, you look just like a ballerina when you do that. I'm thinking, well, you kind of was a ballerina. So it's so just funny. Those little things which make you think you can't, even though you've left the professional aspect, I don't think the ballet world ever kind of leaves you.
Yeah. Yes.
So. Well said. Well said.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess going back to your journeys, like what were some of the things that you were both quite grateful for along your pathway? So Lauren, I know you mentioned that one particular teacher who taught in a style that really clicked with you. Were there other things that you were quite, you know, that you are quite, apart from maybe having good posture when you're working in hospitality, although that is, tick that one, we'll tick that box. So other things that you're grateful for, things that ballet has taught you.
So ballet has taught me so much. I cannot, don't know where to begin in some ways. I've learnt Newton's three laws through ballet, not through science classes. I first learnt them through ballet. Ballet, I believe, is a life teacher in the sense that you grow up fast, you learn determination, drive, you learn passion, you learn what it's like to, what effort is and what work is and how it makes a difference to go after a goal and how it changes you. I can't begin to, anyway, there's that aspect. And also the friendships formed. You go through so much in the ballet, the dance world, and it is a very intense competitive environment. And some ways when you're in that intense competitive environment, there's a bit of, you're not quite friends in the sense because you're always competing against each other. Mm. But in saying that, if you're lucky, which I was very lucky, I've got a great friend in Izzy and I've developed some amazing friendships, that everyone's so nice because you're going through this same experience. You're both going through it. It's a bit shit at times. Like, you know, you have a teacher who's yelling at you. You have this off day in pirouettes or something, and everyone's going through the same shit. Everyone's going for the same goal. And because of that, there's like this common humanity there. And even after, for example, pursuing dance professionally, if I meet a dancer on a street, if I see another Australian dancer overseas, it's like we're instant friends because we share this same experience, which is so unique to dancers. And so for that, I'm grateful. I have amazing friendships now. So it's great.
Izzy.
I love that. Yes, I would definitely agree with that, Lauren. Yeah, definitely the different friendships, particularly when I was making my my documentary, which you watched for my master's. So it was Lauren, Jasmine and Kendall. Just being able to, you all had different stories, but yes, like it was all, you're all unified because you're all dancers. It was, yes, it was really special. And even though I didn't go overseas as well, I felt like I could still resonate with like the ideas about how dance never leaves you. And yeah, so that's very special. I love that point that you made, Lauren. There were definitely a few teachers as well that I had in high school and at my studios who, when particularly at MacArthur Ballet, when all the girls were winning gold medals on the weekends and doing a Stedford after a Stedford, and I was just doing my one ballet solo at Wollongong and Sydney a Stedford, which was all I wanted to do. My teachers never made me feel like that I had to be doing that, or that, oh, why are you only doing one solo? So I was very grateful for that I wasn't put down for that, and I was still, they still looked at me in the same way as you love dancing, and you know, you're not worse than them because you don't want to do all those competitions and all those extra things. So I will always be grateful for that.
Yeah. What a lovely experience. I think that's so valuable, such a valuable point to make, like that your love of dance is still equal to the, you know, the love that those other people might have had as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned your documentary. So you have since pursued a master's in creative industries. Would you like to tell us a bit about your documentary? Because we haven't really talked much about that. But basically, I met you through watching the documentary that you made. So yeah, tell us about that project a little bit.
Yes. So, so it's part of my master's in creative industries. One, the unit was basically you produced a documentary about anything. So I was very excited. I think I was the only dancer in my cohort as well. So it was very different when we were all showing and telling. So it could be about absolutely anything. And I thought, yes, definitely going to do a ballet documentary. When I was on exchange in 2019, just before COVID, for documentary as well, I made a documentary film just on one ballet dancer in Indianapolis, which is where we were studying. So that was really cool. And I thought, oh, I want to do it again, except I want to have more dancers. Yes. So that was when I contacted Lauren and the two other beautiful girls. So that was really good. And basically, when I was planning, I stopped and thought, oh, I hope that they want to share their story, because I know it's going to be, you know, very emotional. But luckily they were all at the stage where it wasn't too close to home. And they, you know, they, of course it was emotional, but I felt so honored that they were able to share all that with me. But basically, I think it went for 8 minutes, and it was them sharing their ballet journeys. I didn't want to have it in a pessimistic light, but I also didn't want it to be like super duper positive. So it's kind of hard to have that balance, but I think it was there. Is about a bit like what we were talking about, the, you know, the dancer in you always lives on, doesn't matter where you were or, you know, what you're doing now. But it also did shed light on the things that the dance world really needs to fix, I suppose. Yes, without it being too negative about the ballet world.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally valid. I think there are a lot of really amazing things about the ballet world, and it's why it has survived, you know, through decades and decades and generations. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, when I did watch the documentary, I kind of did feel, you know, a very strong sort of, okay, these are really young people who have lived, you know, probably not too unusual experiences when it comes to, you know, pursuing a dance career, and they're reflecting on how difficult it actually can be to pursue a passion. And of course, you know, if something worth doing is probably not going to be really easy. Like, there are a lot of ways to say that, but at the same time, you know, I think it's very powerful, because those young voices, you know, they will become dance teachers of tomorrow, dance parents of tomorrow. They'll buy tickets to see the ballet, you know, and I think we still need to keep ballet alive, in not have people coming away from it feeling so burnt out or jaded necessarily. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess if you could give yourselves some advice, imagine that you're giving advice to yourself at 14, what advice would that be?
Yes, probably. Retrospect is difficult, but big one would probably be, it's very cliche, but, you know, the grass isn't greener in someone else's front yard. Yes. So there were a few girls at MacArthur Ballet where I used to always tell my mum, so-and-so is the most perfect ballerina in the world, and she's gonna go so far, and, you know, she's so perfect, and, you know, I hope one day that I can be like her. And obviously that's not what any parent wants to hear. Whenever those girls came back from wherever they were, I would go, oh, they, you know, well, like, what happened? They were meant to be the most perfect ballerina in the world. Like, I had created, obviously they were amazing, but I created these images in my head that weren't true, and they were a bit, you know, they were too exaggerated, but because I wanted to be like that, that's what I made the image to be. And I think that's a really good thing to remember, that you have to, like you have to have perspective, and that, you know, not to have these rose-colored glasses on just because you're not doing what someone else is doing, that, you know, you can water your own grass.
That's great. I love the grass analogy.
Yes.
So really, really powerful, really powerful.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And Lauren?
You carry on with the perspective idea, more so in keeping things in perspective that in the ballet world, you feel that your entire world is ballet. You eat, drink, dance, you know, live, breathe ballet. Used to say ballet before breathing used to be the term we used to say just, oh, as a joke. But yeah, I think it'd be very crucial around 14, 15, especially when so many are going full-time or, you know, part-time and they're really trying to pursue it professionally. I think it's vital to keep a broader perspective that this is your ballet world, but it's not the only thing that matters, that there is so much else out there. And to remember to, you can do normal people things, because I'm looking back thinking when I was 14, 15, I did not have a quote unquote normal person's life. I did not, you know, have, I didn't do anything except dance. Like dance was everything. And so I think looking back, I would say, you know, but in saying that, I might not have gotten as far as I did in the ballet world if I had not sacrificed those things, because you sacrifice everything to achieve this one thing. So I can easily say that now, but in saying that, I don't know how it would have impacted my life in the future. So
yeah, excellent point. And I think that is actually a big unknown, because I think the culture sort of perpetuates that sort of, you know, it seems that that's sort of the pattern, really. Like, and you do invest so much time, it's hard to know what you would have done with that time if you if you could have had it differently. But I think your point is very valid in that it's okay to do normal person things. Yeah.
Normal person.
Normal person. What do you mean by normal person?
We're all doing quotation marks.
We are. Can't see this, but we're doing like the rabbit ears. What what do you mean by normal person things?
Good question. Good question. I think I would mean someone who lives a life which isn't dedicated to one thing, that has more to their life than one thing, that, for example, might do other after school activities other than this one thing, that because of dance, I had a very rigid routine. And so my entire life was ruled by dance, how much I ate, when I went to bed, everything had to be some sort ordered so I could achieve this goal. And I think when you're a normal person, 14, 15, I don't think they think like that. How much am I going to eat? What am I going to eat? I have to be at bed at this time. When am I going to get up so I can do all my exercises and routine? I can't go and see so-and-so then because I need to be well-rested for X, Y, Z. So that's what I kind of mean in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think earlier you mentioned like growing up fast, and I think maybe that's a good example.
Yeah,
there are certainly benefits to that, but yeah, I guess it's the flip side. Is there anything else that you would like to share, any other pearls of wisdom for young dancers or teachers or parents that might be listening to this podcast before I ask my last question?
Remember to breathe, you know, just breathe. Keep going.
So breathing before ballet?
Yes, breathing before ballet. Not the ballet before breathing, breathing before ballet. Yeah. Oh, gosh, as we say now, ballet dies hard. Like the ballet dancer's always with you, but breathe before ballet, not ballet before breathing.
That's pretty good advice.
Yeah, we should be in some ways. You know, they say dancers are smart, but really.
Yep. Yeah, my last question is, what was or is your preferred pair of point shoes? Just a fun one. I had all together.
Preferred point shoes, I've pretty much tried every single brand possible under the sun except for Gaynor Minden's. Sorry, I've tried Grishko, Capizio, Block. I've done the Block Euro Stretch. I've done Repito. I've done Freed. My last pair of point shoes, which I fell in love with, were Freed custom-made point shoes. Used to, from the Freed brand, if you know, accustomed to it, they each have their own different maker. So you might have the crown maker, the heart maker, the butterfly maker. And then I think the crown maker was the really good one, which a lot of people liked. And I also like the butterfly one. And so I used to get custom made butterfly makers point shoes, and they were my favorite point shoes. So yeah, still have a whole heap of them. Don't know what I'm going to do with them, but yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's a secret. Don't tell too many people about that. They're a hard commodity to come by.
Yeah, but the crown point shoe maker or some maker was currently retiring, or one of them was going to retire, and it was a big thing. You wanted to stock up because, you know, once you find a good maker, because the Freed point shoes are so, you know, personalized, then you really want to stick with them. So. Mm.
I loved Gaynor Minden. Absolutely loved them so much. They obviously they have a bit of the preformed arch, and my feet were already quite bendy. So when I put them in the point shoe, it looked amazing. Until I got to McDonald College and Miss Barry said, "You need to get out of Gaynor Minden's." And I wanted to cry. But it was probably good that I did that, and I've been in Grishko ever since, a Grishko Miracle and Stream, which I love as well, but I'll always miss Gaynor Minden.
It's interesting, actually. I mean, I suppose when you're not sort of a student anymore and you're not going through point shoes as quickly, like, you have a bit more freedom to choose over
what
you'd like to wear for a class here and there. So, you know, you might come back to them.
Yes, you never
and
know.
And so different too, your choices, you know, so
yeah.
So
different.
I love hearing.
So I had to choose good point shoes.
I'm skeptical. I don't think your feet would have been.
Yeah, I know, but no. In the dance, I don't have those extremely high insteps or anything, so that's made me experiment a lot with my point shoes, I suppose.
Yes. There you go. Well, thank you both so much for giving your time and sharing your stories. I recognize that they might still be very difficult stories to tell, but they're important stories to tell. And I think, you know, I hope that this episode has shed some light on resilience and opportunity and pathways for young dancers. So thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.